Aaron Rodgers on his first week with the Steelers there on NFL Network. Did a fantastic interview with Kyle Brent, who was wearing a Jerome Bettis Super Bowl 40 throwback jersey, which was a nice touch throughout that conversation. I'm sure if Malzi was here, Donnie, he'd be ripping Brandt for having no journalistic integrity and wearing a jersey and putting another man's name on his back for that entire interview. But alas, Malzi is not here. It's a nice day in the summer, so he's playing golf.
That could be on the next episode of Moral Malzi.
Kyle Brandt, bad guy or good guy, but probably bad guy because he wore a jersey during an interview. Tonight in San Francisco, a chilly one, 60 degrees for first pitch. It gets cold there in the summer. And that is Fan Weather brought to you by Myers Law Group, Pittsburgh's choice for affordable legal solutions. Aaron Rodgers, and we got to give away these Chris DiStefano tickets to see the great comedian. I'm saying great. I don't think I've ever seen him or heard him before, but I'm sure he's terrific. Next month at the Byam Theater. You heard Rodgers talking about sharing that suite with DK Metcalf. That's gotten a lot of buzz. Rodgers told Metcalf, because the toilets are loud in the dorms, if you pee at night, don't flush the toilet because it'll wake me up. So Metcalf, if he has to go to the bathroom, will sometimes text Rodgers to see if he's still up. And if Rodgers says yes, he'll flush. And that happened the other day, and Metcalf texted back, bet, period, I'm about to flush the toilet. Rodgers is 41 years old. Does he even know what that means? Bet. Bet, period, I'm about to flush the toilet. Explain that to people
he's played
listening.
With guys, he's played with guys young enough. I'm sure he's caught on to the lingo.
Yes. Can you tell people what that means? Like humans that are listening to this show that are over the age of, I don't know, 35?
I mean, I've always just interpreted that as like, all right, sounds good.
Have you ever did it yourself? And said, oh, bet, yeah.
In a serious manner, no. I've said it to like Ben Tenuta because that's right up his wheelhouse.
For saying, for talking like that, yeah. Let's get to Rodgers reacting to Terry Bradshaw. You've probably already heard it. It's so good, it's worth hearing again. I've watched it and listened back to it probably a half dozen times since Saturday. So if this is new to you, great. If it's not, that's fine too, because it's interesting, entertaining, and it also leads to a bigger discussion about Rodgers.
I've known Terry for a long time, being a part of Fox. Terry's a legend. He's an absolute legend. He won 4 Super Bowls. He's had a legendary career in the media. But Terry, like a lot of people, doesn't know me. And so he's got an idea of what he thinks about me based on what I've done, the documentary, what I've said, Darkness Retreat, whatever the hell you want to talk about. I'd love to get to know Terry on a deeper level. And I feel like if he gave me a chance to get to know him, that we'd have a good friendship. Because for me, I have nothing but the utmost amount of respect and deference for what the greats have done. Because they laid the foundation for us to be able to play in this great game, to be paid like kings, and to carry on the tradition of excellence that guys like the Bradshaws of the world in the 70s and Bart Starr in the 60s and Lombardi and Joe Montana and Steve Young and Troy Aikman and Brett Favre and all the greats that have been over Tom Brown. We're standing on the backs of those guys, and it's because of how they played and how they carried themselves that we're able to have this opportunity to still play this great game, to get paid really well, to set ourselves up for our future. So I'd love to get to know Terry on a deeper level if he's open to it, and maybe we can go chew some bark or whatever the hell he's talking about together.
It's a great high road answer. It's not going after a guy who's in his 70s and bringing up some, you couldn't spell cat if you spotted him the C and the T, Hollywood Henderson stuff, or, you know, comparing stats. You know, Rodgers will do that sometimes. Rodgers has gone after Ryan Clark before. He'll pick and choose in the sports media who he wants to be an enemy or a friend of. And he decided, now that he's a Steeler, to compliment and praise the career of Terry Bradshaw and say something that is usually true. Don't judge me until you get to know me. Now, for 99% of people, the way we judge you is based on what you show us or tell us, because we have no way of becoming friends with you or getting to know you. So I'm sorry to Aaron Rodgers. One thing I'm going to disagree with him on is, like, how would you want fans to view you? You had control over the documentary that came out. Like, That is the way we get access to you. You go on McAfee's show because you want to peel back the curtain a little bit and give people a chance to get to know you. So when you bring up things like a darkness retreat, if some people think that that's cool and that's deeper thinking and that's introspective, great. If other people think it's bat bleep crazy, well, you can't really be mad at them for that. If you've tried to hang out with Terry Bradshaw and he's basically told you off or left you on red or any of those things, well then, I guess that doesn't reflect well on Bradshaw. But, you know, at the end of the day, what Aaron Rodgers is doing here, I'm not saying it's hard. I'm not saying he's doing anything that's backbreaking. It's not labor intensive. It's probably not giving him any kind of emotional pain or physical anguish or anything like that. He's just knowing, he's doing a very good job of knowing his audience and saying things that make him sound more endearing and likable to fans that are learning about Aaron Rodgers other than his stats and what he's done on a football field for the first time. Or not for the first time, but he's on your team now. Okay? Even though he was in Green Bay and he's great and he's one of the all-time best players ever at the quarterback position, he's out of sight, out of mind in the NFC North. He's getting kind of a clean slate with Steelers fans. And he's acing it so far, in my opinion. Now, I think, you know, what is that worth might be the question. Like, the fact that he's kind to fans in Latrobe and we see his playful interaction with teammates and all of that, is that actually in any way transferable to what's going to happen this season? I would say probably not. But, you know, if he came into this and his attitude sucked and you could tell that he was only here to collect another paycheck, that would be different. He took a big-time discount. He's only playing for $13 million. So I do take him at his word. He also said in this interview, I'll play it right now, he was asked by NFL Network why he didn't retire after 20 years, and this is what he said.
I fell in love with this game when I was 6 years old. I wanted to have that closure and give back to the game one more time the way that it's given to me. As I thought about my life, really everything special in my life is because of this game. Mm-hmm. And that's not hyperbole. The relationships that I have, the friendships that I have, the people that are really important in my life, the money and the fame and the good parts of those and the good feeling is because of this game. I love this game and I want to give back to it one more time and have fun with it. And I just felt like this is what I was supposed to do.
It's fun now. We'll see if it's fun if things go badly early in the season like it did with the Jets last year. But we'll cross that bridge when we get there. He is taking a very unique tact to this final season. It's like he's self-aware enough to know that the Steelers are not a great team. And he also is cognizant enough to realize that the entire football world knows that the Jets experiment was a complete and utter disaster. So he's chosen to say things like, and he's very careful about what he says and how he says it. He's picking out words like, I'm trying to have fun. He's not really said that much, I'm here to win a Super Bowl. I want to go out on top. I want to have a Jerome Bettis finish to my career. He's not putting those lofty expectations on things. He's not setting the bar ridiculously high. The bar he seems to be setting for his Steelers era or tenure is, let's just have it go better than it did in New York. And that's a very low hurdle to jump over. And that's attainable. Like, he doesn't sound like a guy, unless he's trying to undersell and overdeliver, he does not sound like a guy who, even holding himself to a certain standard, expects to get back to being the MVP-type player that he was a few years ago. He just wants to have a good time. But the problem is, in pro sports, good time is, like, intertwined and connected to winning. And sometimes you have to have a bad time and get on people's asses and things have to get uncomfortable and all that to win. And we'll see if Aaron Rodgers is willing to do those things. Brady did, but that was Brady's DNA. Brady's identity was holding everybody super accountable at all times, changing teams and molding the team in his likeness. First 4 days of camp, a lot of the reports have been, hey, Aaron Rodgers is pretty much doing what he's told. It doesn't look like Aaron Rodgers' offense. It still looks like Arthur Smith's offense. I'm not sure that's a great thing at the end of the day, but early on, I guess, give the guy a shot, give him a chance, and don't demand that it has to be done your way from day one. So, look, if I will stand by what I've said about Aaron Rodgers from the second this was potentially going to happen, and then obviously said numerous times after the signing. I still don't think it's going to end well. I still don't think there's going to be some memorable moment in terms of Aaron Rodgers turning around the Steelers the way that Peyton Manning did in Denver or Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. I just don't believe that's going to happen. And Aaron Rodgers has not won me over with the way he's talked to get me to think like his football career is going to end on a better note. But, you know, as someone that had misgivings about him because of his interactions with the Jets and the way he threw Mike Williams under the bus and how easy it was for him to pass the buck to other people in New York and blame them for their struggles, I'm hearing a different person so far during his brief Steelers career. And that makes me want to root for him and makes me like him and want to believe that he can be better.
It doesn't mean a lot as I sit here today.
Why not?
You know, because again, for me, there's so much to be concerned about relative to now. Let's be honest, okay? Like, most of these guys that I coach, it doesn't resonate with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 19, 18 years ago, a lot of these guys were in car seats. And so they respect it, but it's not something that's of value for them. And so why would I, you know, put my business on this collective? I'm just focused on this collective and what we can do together. I think I owe them that. And really, at the end of the day, I doubt that anybody cares. It's just a nice, cool thing for you guys to talk about or use as an intro when you're talking about me or hope for my demise. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Either way, it's sport entertainment. It's not big on my radar.
Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Mike Tomlin on 18 years without a losing season. Doesn't apply to the guys that are playing, so he doesn't bring it up to them because he doesn't think it's going to help them win. It's not going to be something that motivates his guys to play better. It's not like a win one for the Gipper thing where they go out there and say, let's just, you know, let's go 9-8 for Mike. It's not that, so he gets it. I wouldn't expect him to say, though, on national TV, it's all about me if I have another winning season, I'm going to tie Bill Belichick and we'll both have 19 in a row and that'll burnish my legacy and make me a step closer to Canton one day. Like, even if he felt that way, he wouldn't say it. For the record, I don't think he feels that way. He said, I doubt it's something that people really care about. Well, the national media loves it. I mean, the national media thinks that this is Tomlin's greatest contribution to coaching. That the 18 years without a single losing season is his defining characteristic or defining accomplishment or achievement as a coach. Seriously, though, you hear among people that want to argue for Mike's place among the greatest coaches of all time, more of them will bring up 18 years without a losing season than they will him winning the Super Bowl, because a lot of coaches win Super Bowls. Brian Billick won a Super Bowl. Barry Switzer won a Super Bowl. Gary Kubiak won a Super Bowl. What takes him out of that ho-hum group of coaches is the fact that he's been here almost two decades and he's never had a losing season. And he runs away from that instead of embracing that. And I think things would be different if he had higher... if there were like higher points of success, you know, if after 2010, it's ironic because now Aaron Rodgers is here. His coaching resume after that season is a really mixed bag. Because even the years in which they won playoff games, when they beat Vontaze Burfict and the Bengals in that loony game in Cincinnati, after they beat Kansas City on a game where they scored no touchdowns and kicked only field goals, those teams in the end are still looked at as underachievers. They had Ben in his prime. They had a wide receiver who was better than anybody else, and they had an all-pro running back. And they made one AFC championship game, and they were largely non-competitive in it. So even the years where they went 13-3 or went 11-4, 12-5 in one playoff games, there's even a glass half empty, bitter taste in your mouth after those seasons. And now, oh my God, like we'd give body parts. You'd give a testicle to watch those teams again flame out in the second or third week of the playoffs. Because that beats what we've had post Big Ben. You know, Roth, the Rodgers, Mike Tomlin, 1 year marriage is something that I think they're both going into it with a different set of expectations, it feels like. Tomlin, I do think he is aware, he is self-aware enough to realize that the external heat is turned up on him, and he knows he's not going to get fired for it, but he lives here. He's probably sick of having a negative approval rating with people. He's also a super-duper competitive guy, and it's got to pain him and eat at him that other franchises, other coaches have passed him by, and under his stewardship the last half decade, they've been a slightly above-average team. And that grates on a guy who wants to win a lot. And Rodgers, meanwhile, I think is like, well, you know, I got to give back, you know, football's given me so much. I want to go out with more than a whimper. And it would be interesting. Like if they have a season that's a lot like last year where they make the playoffs, they win double digit games, but they don't have a great playoff game. I bet we hear Aaron Rodgers after the season say, you know what? I'm satisfied with how things went. Thank you, Pittsburgh. Thank you, Steelers fans, for letting me letting me moonlight here for a year. I'm going to now fade off into the sunset and read all the books I want and walk all the beaches I want and do whatever I'm going to do in my retirement. Tomlin, I think, would, you know, push a family member into traffic to win a playoff game and make it to the divisional round weekend. The streak of non-losing seasons, it's really, you know, the impressive parts of it are going 8-8 with Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges and not bottoming out. You know, his own grave that he dug himself with Mitch Trubisky, Kenny Pickett, and Mason Rudolph again, being able to dig out of that self-imposed grave and get to 10-7. You know, those are years where, all right, you'd say, given the quarterbacks he had, not bad. Now, you know, I still ding him because he was picking the roster and had huge say over those guys being here. But he also went 8-8 in 2012 and 2013 when Roethlisberger was in his mid to late 20s and should have been at the time one of the two or three best quarterbacks in the entire league. And it's years like that where they took massive steps backwards, finished barely 500, that have extended this thing out to 18 years. If Tomlin goes 9-8 or better this year, it's the second longest non-losing season streak in NFL history. The best is still Tom Landry, who went 21 years with the Cowboys, won two Super Bowls in that time. But then at the end of that, like they really bottomed out, and that led to Jerry Jones taking over, firing him, and replacing him with Jimmy Johnson, which ended pretty well. But not for Jerry, because he got power hungry, pushed Jimmy Johnson out, won a Super Bowl in 95 with Barry Switzer, and hasn't been back since. And of all the NFC teams, the Cowboys have the longest NFC championship game drought. The other 15 teams in the conference have been to the conference championship game more recently than them, and yet the team that gets talked about and discussed more than anybody else is still the Cowboys. Go figure. Check out Poppin' Joe, or whoever the hell's hosting that show, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Wednesdays at noon for the Starkey Card of the Week from Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. Go to 93.7thefan.com's contesting page to learn more. This is the PM Team Weekend Review. Malzie's weekend has stretched into a Monday. He's off playing golf somewhere. We can do a Big Ben topic without Malzie here. Coming up next hour, Art Rooney putting Ben into the Steelers Hall of Honor. Hear where Art Rooney ranked Ben all time among quarterbacks. He put him in rarefied air. Donnie is here. I think PM Team Weekend Review is just going to turn into movie review. Like most of the free world, the two of us watched Happy Gilmore 2 this weekend. And I got to admit, I thought it was one of the best sequels I've ever watched. Yeah.
One of the best sequels you've ever watched.
Sequels suck. Sequels, by and large, suck.
I know, but I'm not going to put it up.
It was a really good sequel.
I'm not going to put it up there with, like, okay, you got Godfather Part 2 or The Dark Knight.
And I tweeted that, and I said, look, it's not Godfather 2, but by sequel standards, this is a fantastic sequel.
I thought it got the job done. I mean, it was definitely silly, which is what was expected.
People think they were getting? Citizen Kane? I mean, it's not supposed to be a serious drama. It's freaking Happy Gilmore comes back after 30 years.
Right. Like, you can't go into it thinking it'll be a great sequel. And you can't go into it thinking it's going to touch the original, because it doesn't do that either. But I thought that it exceeded the expectation a little bit. I don't think it was, like, outstanding.
All right, think about this. Would you agree that Caddyshack is one of the greatest movies of all time?
Yeah, it's certainly
have
not.
Have you ever tried to watch
2?
Exactly. Yes, Caddyshack 2 sucked.
Yeah.
Jaws 2 sucked.
Yeah, every Jaws sequel was awful.
Right. Most of these movies after the original are just unwatchable. This is a very watchable movie.
Yeah, I mean, it got, you know, it made you laugh. It was silly. Like, it gets the job done there. Like, if you just want, like, an easy-to-watch movie.
I cried twice. I'll admit that. I cried.
It's probably too early to give, like, downright spoilers.
But there was something that happened in the first... Did you think what happened in the first 5 minutes of the movie was going to happen?
Yeah, that's actually a part I was not a fan of.
Did you know that going in?
No, I didn't.
Me neither. So they already pulled a curveball on you right off the bat there. I'm not going to, like you said, it's too soon to give that away entirely. So that was a moment that I didn't see coming. There were laugh out loud moments. I thought some of the people that came into the supporting cast, I thought John Daly was good. He had a way bigger role than I thought. He had his moments. Our girl Paige Spiranek. Just a very solid performance as a Dick Sporting Goods employee, I thought.
Oh, I
loved it.
You watch that, and it's like I thought it was Meryl Streep.
So I gave it, I think I only used 4 stars for some reason when I first did it. I gave it 3 out of 4 stars.
I don't know.
Why can't you go there?
I mean, it was fine. Like, what would you give it then?
Like a B minus? C plus?
Yeah, like a C plus grade. It was about what I expected, and it went a little bit above that. Like, I thought it got funnier than I expected.
What's holding it
to.
Back from being just a good movie in general, in your opinion?
I thought the main antagonist was pretty lame.
Okay.
I don't know if you felt the same way. Like, what was his name in the movie? Frank Manatee?
Yes. Yeah, okay, you're saying he doesn't measure up to Shooter McGavin in the original, and I think that that's
right,
fair
critique. Which I understand is, like, impossible
I
to do.
I thought Shooter came back and had his moments.
Christopher McDonald was very good. He brought back the old...
He had sat around for 30 years without getting any acting opportunities. He had been typecast as Shooter McGavin, and thank God, after a long wait, they made a second one of these. So he got back in the mix.
Here's something else I'll give it credit for. I don't know if you saw recently, I don't know how recent the interview actually was, but the comments were made public somewhat recently.
Yep.
They had to change up a lot of this because Carl Weathers was supposed to be like a pretty big part.
Ooh,
again,
I didn't know that.
As Chubbs. So it does make you wonder how much different the movie would have been if Chubbs was still in it, if Carl Weathers was still with us.
Or like what The Sopranos would have been like if Tony's mom never died in real life. Because they had to make Janet a bigger character because of that. Did you know that?
Yeah, but Tony's mom sucks so bad that I don't think it really...
Oh, yeah, because Janet's... Because Janet was a real winner. Janice.
But yeah, I mean, but it's not like...
She was a loathsome character too,
man. It's not like we lost, I don't know, Christopher in the second season of the show.
Yeah, you're like the guy, the Chubbs replacement, his son, really didn't do much for me.
Did you recognize who that was, by the way?
Yeah, that was the guy from Breaking Bad,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Huel. Lavelle Crawford.
He gets fat, skinny, fat again and everything now. Would you agree with that?
You're right. He was big again.
He was big again. He got skinny for a while, and now he's fat again.
Yeah. Kind of the Jonah Hill thing.
Or Oprah.
But I ultimately enjoyed the movie. Yeah. I mean, there were parts that absolutely made me laugh. You just can't go in it with like the unfair expectation that it's going to be better than the OG. I mean, I'm one of those people. I think the original Happy Gilmore's his best work.
I agree. We were talking about that, Amanda and I. If you asked Adam Sandler, would he call Happy Gilmore his best movie? And I think he probably would, right?
And think about this. I mean, I know that he made like a Grown Ups 2. I know there's like a couple that have gotten sequels, but not many. I also, for the Grown Ups thing, I think that was just more, I want to hang out with my main core buddies for a few more months.
Which I was surprised. Like, there were a bleep ton of cameos.
But you didn't get, like, the heavy hitters.
No Kevin James, yeah. No David Spade, none of those guys. You did get Rob Schneider for 5 seconds.
Yes. Yes, you did. That was one I actually forgot about until just now.
And there were
a
couple of
one.
His goofy friends who were in all those old movies who weren't in this one. I don't know if they've died. But they're always...
Who are you referencing there?
Well, I have no idea what these guys' names are. But there was, like, a troupe of actors that was, like, five or six deep. That were in all the Sandler movies, and the guy with the lazy eye was back, and the old guy and the old guy who was on the beach in this movie, who's the dude who spoke in like the Cajun twang that you couldn't understand, and
He was Farmer Fran,
yeah,
and the Water Boy,
and the Water Boy, yeah. He was in it.
He's in a lot of stuff.
But then a couple of his other go-to guys were not in this, so I don't know if there's been a falling out or maybe they've just. Gotten old.
So Alan Covert is a big one. That was the one that was his caddy in the first one, like the homeless guy.
Oh yeah, was he in this one?
I don't remember.
I don't
think
he was. That's exactly who I'm talking about. Thank you.
And another big one is Peter Dante, who was like the quarterback in The Water Boy.
That's the other guy I'm thinking about. Where was he?
Yeah, I don't know if they had any sort of like falling out. Or whatever, but yeah, I mean, he snuck some of those other guys in there. One of my buddies
he always
wondered,
gave those guys a solid.
One of my buddies wondered if he reached out to Chris Rock about being Chubbs' son before he reached out to.
Yeah.
Huel.
Or how about like a Tim Meadows?
He's buddies with Timmy Meadows too.
Right.
He's in a lot of those movies. But there's another, I wouldn't say like big one. In terms of like the guys that are in all of his movies, Kevin Nealon,
he came back.
Gary Potter,
yes, he did. Feeling the flow.
I thought he was gonna drop a couple of the old lines. I like the little Will Zalatoris play because everybody's made that joke.
I thought Zalatoris was pretty good in this movie. He had a big among the golfers. He probably had more speaking lines than Rory, and although Scheffler did have quite a bit.
Scheffler was one of the funnier ones, I thought.
Yeah, he did deliver some
and then,
good one-liners.
See, like there's one I liked a lot that was very, it was a line that was very subtle from him, but it was one of the funnier moments.
Well,
I don't want to completely
spoil
that one.
Well, I told you guys this off the air. I said, I just hope this doesn't turn into a movie where he just shoehorns his daughters in and like he has to almost make up roles for them. And that kind of happened with one of his daughters, I felt like. What did we just get here?
Oh, so our web guy, Andy Lindberg. Okay, so now there's a reason why that he has not had Peter Dante in any of his movies recently.
Yes, because more than 10 years ago, he uttered a racial slur, allegedly. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good enough reason to not have him in. And then allegedly threatened to kill his neighbor and harm his wife and kids. All right. That's how you get cut off by Adam Sandler right there, folks.
And that guy.
But how about the guy that was his caddy in the first one? And I mean, I look, this Bad Bunny obviously has a huge following, but they should have brought back the homeless guy as his caddy. Don't you think?
Yeah.
He's one of the better characters from the original Happy Gilmore. What the heck's he been up to for 30 years? Let's get an update on him. See, now I'm actually starting to knock my rating down to this movie a little bit.
So now what I'm seeing here is that. Now, I mean. What Google's telling me is that there's no there was no evidence of a falling out between Covert and Sandler.
And the guy who played Jaws and James Bond, who was in Happy Gilmore,
Mr. Larson,
dead.
Yes.
But then the basketball player played his son, and he did a brilliant job.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
I think it's a good movie. Did you watch it yet, Jack? You going to give it a whirl?
I did watch it, and I thought it was very good, yes.
There you go. Very good.
I also thought that Bad Bunny was the best cameo in the movie. I thought he was the best actor.
Well, we could disagree on that, but that's all right.
Okay, so I found a Yahoo article here about why Alan Covert was absent from Happy Gilmore 2, which, by the way, here's a funny piece of trivia. I know Happy Gilmore, the original, like the back of my hand. It's one of those movies that Sarah will not watch with me because I can't help myself.
But just quote it before they say the lines. Yeah, that is very annoying.
Do you know what the caddy's actual name is?
When would they have said it?
I don't know if they ever do. I don't know if it's on a...
The guy gets kicked off the grounds of the country club for trying to clean their cars. Then Gilmore waits for them to appoint him a caddy. They don't. And then you see him bring him onto the golf course at the first tee. But I think that's really it, right?
Yeah.
I don't really think
Otto is his name.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it says here, it seems there was no reason outside the movie to replace the actor in Happy Gilmore 2, as Alan Covert continues to share a working relationship with Adam Sandler, in whose films he often appears. It seems that the reason for Covert's character being cut out is mainly narrative.
Yeah, that's not a good enough reason.
And then it also brings up all the other people that were also in this one, the commissioner's back in it. How about the IRS guy that threw grandma out of her house?
Yep. Obviously, Ben Stiller.
Yes.
Hal-El. I think Hal-El should have had a bigger role. If I'm going to actually nitpick this movie, make him the biggest villain. Maybe he gets involved in the competing tour in some way. It tries to undermine Happy.
He's been a good villain before. I mean, White Goodman in Dodgeball. That's a good sports movie villain.
What's the line from the first one where his mom goes, I think I'd like a warm glass of milk.
You can take a warm glass of shut the hell up. Now you will go to sleep or I will put you to sleep.
That's a good that's a good moment from the first one. He'll take a warm. Who the hell drinks warm milk before bed? Seriously. All right.